Okay, this is not social hour. Right, so here we go. A couple of announcements to start. First, Mind and Supermind is on November 5th, and we took a chance by inviting somebody who isn't mega famous, but who is really, really good and authoritative. She's not unfamous. She's appeared in 10-second or 20-second clips on everything major, but she's not somebody that has a lot of name recognition. Her name is Jean Twenge. She's a professor at San Diego State, and her latest book, written last year, is called iGen, and then it has a long subtitle about the kids that are growing up with smartphones in their hands.
Did we see a video of one of the talks?
Maybe we did. I think I showed a video of some of her stuff, yeah. Good. People that are just coming in, make sure you check your name. Okay, good, great. She's going to talk to us about the data, about what we're finding about this generation, which is kind of exceptional and a little bit scary. We tried to focus her in a positive direction, like what can we do about this, and what are their strengths as well as their weaknesses. But it's clear that there's a huge sociological shift going on, and it has the most major implications. And she's the most expert person to talk about it. So we invited her to come to Mind and Supermind on November 5th. It's going to be in the Garvin Theater. So that's a wonderful venue, but there are only 400 seats. And there'll be a lot of interest in schools about this. So I would suggest getting the tickets early if you're going to get tickets to Mind and Supermind. And there's a flyer sitting right there. Judith? Would you make a quick announcement about this? Do you want this?
I don't think so. I think that I can do it from here. But I see a lot of familiar faces. I'm from Word and Life, and we met yesterday. We have 10 sessions every fall. But this session, we're talking about HeartMath. It's a wonderful program that we all wanted to know more about. It's a connection between the brain and the heart and the coherence. We had a wonderful 87 people came yesterday with standing ovation to the speaker, Captain Blur. So I have some flyers over there. It's $10 a session, and the book is $12. So come and join us.
Yeah. Word and Life, is, if many of you go to Word and Life, Word and Life is really wonderful, and I think this fall session is exceptional. So if you need more information, there are flyers there. Peter. And Peter, do you want this?
No?
Okay.
My name is Peter Wright. I'm a board certified past life regressive therapist, and I wanted to announce that this Tuesday at the Santa Barbara University Club will be a presentation on the afterlife. And it will focus on three speakers, an anthropologist whose name is Kahane Draw, a psychic medium whose name is Tony Morris, and Peter Wright. So join us on Tuesday. There are flyers over here, and see you there. Thank you.
Welcome. Okay. What we're going to do now. Okay, so everybody, you need.
Dr. Spencer, yeah. What are we going to talk about every week?
What are we going to talk about every week?
Okay, you can tell us.
I have no idea. Because it evolves, it creates itself.
Ah.
I just know what we're going to talk about this week, I think, sort of, kind of. It really does create itself. I try not to fix it too early because things change and things develop. Okay, so I'm going to talk a little about mindfulness. We'll sit, and then directly after the sitting, we'll go into this little, very brief exercise that we're going to do. So you'll need handy a writing material, a writing implement, paper, and a surface you can write on. If you don't have any hard surface, take a bunch of pieces of paper. That'll be your hard surface. You're not going to be writing that much. Let me tell you a little about the exercise, because when we come out of the mindfulness, we're going to go directly into it, so I don't want to talk very much then, because you'd be nice and focused. So this is an exercise that I thought we'd start out with because I wanted to start out on a high note, an especially high note. This is quite a positive exercise. I cooked this one up last spring, just out of the ether, and I tried it with my positive psychology class, thinking it probably would go nowhere, but it was the most significant exercise we did all semester, and I have continually referred to what I wrote at that point. So I'm hoping that you will find it similarly meaningful. It is a very private exercise, which means that don't look at anybody else's paper. Don't show it to anybody else unless you really, really want to. This is entirely for you, okay? I don't want you to censor yourself in any way because you think somebody else is going to see this. Also, when you're doing the exercise, which only take about 7 minutes at the most, don't stop yourself from writing anything. Do not censor yourself. Let it flow right out of you without any attempt to change any word, to change anything you're going to say, to stop anything you're going to say. You can throw it away later. Nobody's going to see it anyway. You can rewrite it as much as you want. When you're first doing this, you have to let it come spontaneously without hesitation. No, we're going to meditate first, which I'll tell you, and then we're going to go right into the exercise. Okay? So have your writing materials ready. Okay, in terms of meditation, I'm totally preaching to the choir here, so I won't preach very much. What do I want to say? Okay, this is mindful, if you do any kind of meditation you want, meditate for 10 minutes in silence. If you're doing mindfulness, you keep returning attention to your breathing. That's what you do. You just bring your attention to your breathing. No matter what else is happening, keep coming back to your breathing, coming back to your breathing. And what will happen is you'll be able to notice thoughts without immediately getting caught up in them and getting taken away by them. But you'll notice the thoughts in your head. There are words and pictures that go through your head. You'll notice your feelings in your body. And you'll notice sensations within your body and coming through your sense organs. And how do you do that? You don't do it by thinking you're doing it. That's another thought, a fancy way to fool yourself. You do it by bringing your attention to your breathing again and again and again, and just resting your attention on your breathing. And then when it gets taken away from your breathing, you realize, oh, I got caught up in thought. Back to your breathing. Every time you get caught up, it's like this, the usual you. Every time you find your breathing, you take a step back and you become mindful. Simple as that. Even simpler, one, two, three. Breathe. Soften. Face. Heart. Body. Mind. Feelings. Spirit. Just let everything soften and open. Three. Notice whatever's taking place without trying to do anything about anything. Just breathe, soften and open, and notice the show. Even simpler. Forget the soften part now. B-O-N, bom. A pre-Buddhist religion, I think, and also the word good in French, bon. Okay, B-O-N, that's what you do. Just because I see this here, if you want some guidance on this, audio guidance, you can go to my website, amongst many, 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 many other wonderful pieces of guidance on the internet. And if you want to hear this session, courtesy of Michael recording it and Robert putting it on his website, or any previous session we've done, or the life stories that you've written, or a lot of other stuff, you go to swt.org/Spencer, and up comes a menu of a plethora of things from this class, thanks to Michael and Robert. So, what are you going to do when you sit and meditate? If you're doing mindfulness, you're not going to do anything. You're just going to let yourself relax. You're going to find the breathing that's already there. You're not going to try to change it. You're just going to keep returning attention to your breathing and notice what you notice. Now, this is so, for most of you, so obvious that you wish I didn't say it. So I'll say one more thing that might be not quite so obvious, which is, when you do this for a little while, you step behind your personality. Your personality is in front of you. You notice the way your personality works. Now, your personality is like your suit of clothes. It got given to you when you were really little by your genetics, modified by your early life experience. You did not choose your suit of clothes. At this point, you may love that suit of clothes. You may have some mixed feelings about that suit of clothes. You may have a lot of mixed feelings about that suit of clothes. The shirt may be frayed, the pants may be too short, the colors may be egregious. It's not your fault. You did not choose your personality. Your personality was foisted upon, given to you. Okay. So when you are mindful, you just see this pattern of interfacing with the world. That's what your personality is. It's the pattern of interfacing with the world. It worked at some point. That's why you developed it. It caused you to survive. It was a good survival strategy. If it doesn't work so well now in various areas, it's because you've outgrown the need for some of those survival strategies, and maybe you need to change your shirt, or mend your pants, or get rid of your whatever and get a new one. Those are all things you can do from a mindful perspective, but it's really important to understand that your personality is not you. Your personality is your system of interfacing with the world. And you need to have a little compassion for yourself for not interfacing with the world perfectly all the time. You need to have a little intelligence about what's working and what's not working. So when you sit and you breathe, what you predominantly pay attention to is the workings of your heart and mind put together as your personality. And you have compassion for that being that you walk around in. All right, why don't we sit? Okay. So we'll sit for 10 minutes. If there's noise, what do? You notice the sensation. Come back to your breathing. Just keep coming back to your breathing, softening and opening, and letting everything be just as it is. I will ring the bell in 10 minutes.
I'll ring it now. I'll ring it now. I'll ring it in 10 minutes.
Okay, so we need the writing implement and the writing surface. If anybody doesn't have paper, there's paper here. Come get some. Okay. Here's what to do. This will take probably 5 minutes, maybe 7 at the most. If you get done early, go back to sitting and meditating, see if anything else wants to appear. So, title the page, you'll probably write way less than a page. Title the page, My Best Qualities. My Best Qualities. Okay. And what you're going to do is just let emerge, just write down without thinking about it, the things that you know that are really special about you. Maybe nobody else knows these things or appreciates these things, but you know. So this is for you to look at, for you to talk to yourself. So 5 minutes or so, just whatever comes to you without agonizing about it, just if it comes out, let it out, even if it's not. Just do it, okay? My best qualities.
That's it.
Right?
That's it.
That's it.
Oh,
just list my best qualities.
Focus.
Put it away. Or no one else. So, this is something for you to look at, only you to look at, and maybe to redraft or to add to. So you realize, oh my God, how can I overlook that? So, but keep it private. These are your gifts. These are the things that you particularly have to offer. Are you giving these gifts? This is what you should build your life around. These qualities brought into the world. So you might look and see whether that's the case. And if it's not the case for certain of these qualities, how could it become the case? So I'll just leave this here. It's just a kind of interesting little way to begin. And we'll see as the weeks go on if there's anything to be said about it. All right. Now what we're going to do is, what do you want to ask?
If you're capable of acknowledging these, how are you incapable of following through on them? They're inculcated in you and part of your being.
People, don't realize until they focus they have these special qualities, and secondly, for various reasons, they are inhibited about showing them, expressing them. Soren Kierkegaard, 150 years ago, said, almost 200 years ago, he's a Danish philosopher and theologian, said, almost 200 years ago, the common misery is to not choose to be who one really is. And the deepest misery is to choose to be other than who one really is. He was pretty smart. So the point is, we sometimes we're not able to be who we really are, for various reasons.
More. I think what you said is probably more, well, it seems to be more apparent today than at any other time, about how so many of us are compromising who we really are in order to be able to either fit or not fit or just simply not be.
Yeah, I think that's true. The pressures are not in the right, in a healthy direction. Let's see, I'm ready.
But can't you develop them as, let's say, I'm going to be an artist, and I wasn't a very good artist, but I really wanted to be an artist. I take classes in art to improve my art skill. When you do that with other things like this, that you're not innately, yet you have a desire for something.
If you have the feeling for art, okay, then what gets in the way of your being a quote-unquote good artist is the judgment that you are or aren't talented in art. That your job is to be true to that passion in you. And as you are true to that, you'll develop whatever skills you need to bring that passion forward. But you're not trying to be Van Gogh, you're trying to be you portrayed as ably as you're able, as you can. So the thing that gets between us and these things from childhood frequently that we were made alive by is the judgment of other people. And then we internalize that judgment. I'm not good at this. I can't be a dancer. I can't be an artist. I can't be a physicist, whatever it is. And that quashes those qualities, but it can't kill them. It just suppresses them. So it's our own judgments that get between us and making these things full in us. Okay. So again, that was just a little, that's just the beginning. I just want to kick it off with that. Okay. Now what I want to do is talk about consciousness, right? Because that's the name of the class, right? Consciousness, science, and the nature of being. So at the risk of saying what many of you already know, I will briefly make two maps of consciousness, okay? And then, once we get through with that kind of introductory didactic stuff, we will go for the high end again. We'll look at mystical experience, because why not, if we're going to dive off the cliff in the question of consciousness, might as well dive off the highest cliff upward. So that's what we're going to try to do. We won't get it all done today. If we don't get it all done today, next week we'll resume with talking about mystic experience and what it may or may not be and what the evidence for or not for it is and the various points of view about whether it's delusion or whether it's reality. We'll talk about all that next week. And then I have a guest coming in 2 weeks, but I'll tell you about that next week. We'll talk about this also. So, first thing we got to do. This is the egg diagram from Psychosynthesis. This is a very rudimentary map of consciousness. This is made by Roberto Assagioli, the founder of Psychosynthesis, about 100 years ago. I will fill these things in.
Go ahead and name of the person.
Assagioli, A-S-S-A, Assag. I gotta write it. I can never do it unless I write it. So, Assagioli. Okay, Assagioli. I can never do it unless I write it. And this is Psychosynthesis. It about when Freud was evolving psychoanalysis in Italy. Assagioli was evolving Psychosynthesis, which is an exquisite system for personal growth, for putting you together rather than taking you apart. This book is, I think, the best book for probably the best single book in Psychosynthesis, called What We May Be, by Piero Ferrucci. This is a great book. If you haven't read What We May Be, you really might like to. Every word is well chosen. It's 100% truth value.
When will you fill that in?
I'm going to fill it in right now.
Okay.
So I'm actually going to fill it in as I read about a page of what Assagioli said. Okay. Assagioli's so-called egg diagram represents our total psyche, that is our entire mind. The three horizontal divisions of the oval stand for our past, present, and future. Can you see? Can anybody see that? Past, present, future.
What's past?
Wait, I'm going to fill it in a minute so you see.
Okay.
All three are active in us, although in different ways. The lower unconscious, one, mainly represents our personal psychological past in the form of repressed complexes and long forgotten memories.
So, one is the again, all this is active in us at any moment, okay? The part of you you're aware of now from a psychodynamic perspective is just a small part of who you really are and what is really motivating you. So,
the lower unconscious, one, mainly represents our personal psychological past in the form of repressed complexes, that is, difficulties, and long forgotten memories. If we wish to consciously encourage our growth, we need to investigate our lower unconscious. Otherwise, it may be the source of trouble, storing repressed energy, controlling our actions, and robbing us of our freedom. So you need to do some work to figure out how you got to be who you are and what your stuff is based on what happened before. Two, the middle unconscious, two, is where all the skills and states of mind reside, which can be brought at will into our field of consciousness. Four. Okay, the middle unconscious, two, second level, is where all the skills and states of mind reside, which can be brought at will into our field of consciousness. Four.
Into the circle that is our current field of consciousness. So what did Sigmund Freud call this stuff that can be at will brought into the field of consciousness? Probably know this. The preconscious. Okay? Freud said, when he made that iceberg diagram, he said the conscious is above the surface of the water, the unconscious is way down there, and just below the surface of the water is the preconscious, the stuff you can bring into consciousness just by focusing on it. Okay? And this is the stuff you can bring into consciousness. For example, how do you feel right now? Well, I feel pretty good. You know, that was something that you weren't aware of. It wasn't in four, but now that you focus on it, you can bring it right in. So two is the middle unconscious, and four is the field of consciousness.
Our evolutionary future comprises the states of, our evolutionary future comprises the states of being, of knowing, and of feeling we call the superconscious. Three.
This is what we are evolving to become, the superconscious.
This will be useful when we look at various aspects of consciousness as the course goes on. So this rudimentary understanding will serve us in the future, which is why I'm presenting it. In the words of Acciaiuoli, the superconscious is the region from which, quote, we receive our higher intuitions and inspirations artistic, philosophical, or scientific, are ethical imperatives and urges to humanitarian and heroic action. So I'll read it again. The region, the superconscious, number three, the region from which we receive our intuitions and inspirations, artistic, philosophical, or scientific, our ethical imperatives and urges to humanitarian and heroic action. So what's above us comes to us through the superconscious. We exceed our usual selves when we become inspired in these ways, when we become energized in these ways.
Oh, excellent. What's the present? What number is that?
Two. The superconscious is the source of higher feelings, such as altruistic love, of genius, and of the states of contemplation, illumination, and ecstasy. The exploration of the superconscious is one of our great tasks. The distinction between the lower and the higher unconscious, the number one and number three, is developmental, not moralistic. The lower unconscious merely represents the most primitive part of ourselves, the beginner in us, so to speak. It is not bad, it is just earlier. Conversely, the superconscious constitutes all that we can still reach in the course of our evolution. It is not, however, merely an abstract possibility, but a living reality with an existence and powers of its own. Our psyche is not isolated. It is bathed in what Carl Jung called the collective unconscious. Seven. Words. The collective unconscious is, quote, the precondition of each individual psyche, just as the sea is the carrier of the individual wave. Notice that that's the Jung quote, that's where it ends. The collective unconscious is the precondition of the individual psyche, just as the sea is the carrier of the individual wave. Notice that all the lines are dotted to signify that no rigid compartments impede interplay among all the levels. Who experiences all these levels? The self does. In the early stages of human development, awareness of the self is non-existent. For most of us, it now exists in a more or less veiled or confused way. Our task is to gain experience of it in its pure state as the personal self or I. Five.
Number five?
Yeah. So what he's saying is most of us don't have an entirely elusive picture of ourselves. That is, there are some elements of confusion about who we really are. And what our task is to clarify that confusion so we get a strong sense of self. You know, many of you are therapists, you know that what we're trying to do is take a kind of not fully put together a sense of self and make a strong person out of it. That's what Freud said, right? He said you want to strengthen the ego, get a stronger sense of a person. Yeah, Robert.
Is that a direct contradiction to Buddhism?
To what?
Buddhism?
No, it's a stage where actually, Asadola is going to talk about it, but what we often say is you got to have a self before you can transcend the self. If you don't have a strong sense of who you are, your attempts to become a larger person just cause you to become a more scattered person, less of a person. You really have to have an idea of who you are before you can elevate that idea. So that's what he's going to talk about next. The personal self is a reflection or an outpost of the transpersonal self. Six, enough to give us a sense of centeredness and identity. It lives at the level of individuality, the self, where it can learn to regulate and The personal self is a reflection or an outpost of the transpersonal self. Six, enough. The personal self is enough to give us a sense of centeredness and identity. It lives at the level of individuality, where it can learn to regulate and direct various elements of the personality. Awareness of the personal self is a precondition for psychological health. You have to have a sense of yourself if you're going to be psychologically healthy. Identification with number six, which I'll write in a minute, the transpersonal self is a rare occurrence. For some individuals, the culmination of years of discipline. For others, a spontaneous, extraordinary experience. It was described in ancient times with the Sanskrit words Sat Chit Ananda, being, consciousness, bliss. The transpersonal self, while retaining the sense of individuality, lies at the level of universality, in a realm where personal plans and concerns are overshadowed by a wider vision of the whole. The realization of the transpersonal self is a mark of spiritual fulfillment. So, the personal self, who you generally feel you are, is a diminution, a reduction of who you really are, according to this. The transpersonal self, which is the interface between all and the individual. So up here, you're both everything and one thing. And that reflects down to your sense of being the individual that you generally feel you are. Okay. That's according to psychosynthesis. That make sense, that diagram? Mm-hmm. So the idea is to, by your efforts, grow to realize the deeper identity that you are. Carl Jung talked about this. I'm probably going to talk about individuation, Jung's scheme, in more detail. But Jung said that the individuation process, in very condensed form, has four stages. Stage one is the stage of the shadow, where you start here, okay? And if you want to grow, the first thing you got to do is you got to go here. You got to go down into all the stuff that you repress, that you tried to forget about, that you deny about yourself, that you don't like about yourself, that you don't own. And you got to take all that material, the shadow material that you stuffed, that you walled off from consciousness. It comes out in dreams sometimes or in embarrassing things that you do or say, but mostly you keep it imprisoned because it's bad. You know, when you're growing up, you learn sometimes you're good, sometimes you're bad. What do you do with the stuff that's bad? You get rid of it, but you can't get rid of it because you wouldn't be there if it wasn't part of your evolutionary history and useful. So you stop it. So Jung said what you got to call it. Jung made a famous diagram of the self. Jung's famous diagram of the self. I didn't know I was going here, but you know. Jung's famous diagram of the self looks like this. That's the self. It's like a crescent moon, okay? Jung's diagram of the self, a crescent moon. Which is bigger, the part that is illuminated
the current self you know about, or the part that is in shadow? He called it the shadow. He said, you want to grow? First job, clean the shadow out. Bring the elements of that you disowned, bring them into your conscious personality and learn how to integrate them in a healthy way. So your anger, which you disown, I'm never going to get angry. You have to realize that you have anger, that it has a function, and you have to bring it into consciousness, you have to feel it, you have to realize what its function is. When you've been taught that anger is bad, then you repress it, and then it comes out every once in a while in a destructive fashion. That's not what anger is about. Anger is about changing things for the better. That's why you have anger. Anger says, this is not acceptable. I have to do something about this, otherwise I can't be alive. So when people own their anger, then they say, hey, I have some motivation here. I have some courage here. I have some determination here so that I can change the things in my life that need changing. I can grow in the ways I need to grow, and I can change the world so that it helps me and everybody else live. So people, you know, when Martin Luther King sat at that lunch counter, he wasn't a happy chap. He sat there with an anger that was channeled into this is going to change. So the point is, all this stuff that you suffer all has to be brought to the light of consciousness and then integrated into your personality if you want to grow. And that's step one of four steps, according to Jung. Okay. Step two in the individuation process, that is the process of becoming who you really are, is you have to realize your contrasexual element. Now, Jung grew up in a time when men and women were really very different. They were socialized differently, they thought about themselves differently, they had different roles in life. So he's a little bit dated in this regard. But he said that if you're a man, you have to realize that the feminine qualities that you look for out in your other half are really in you. That you have those qualities, they're your anima. And you keep projecting it out. Is she my anima? Is she my anima? Is she my anima? When your anima is in here. And if you're a woman, you have the masculine qualities that you haven't learned to own. So you project them out. Does he have? Is he? That's your animus. But animus and anima exist in each of us. And unless you can realize that you have all these qualities already, then you're constantly making yourself half a person. And you're looking for the other half. And it's like two non-swimmers in the ocean of life grabbing each other to stay above the surface and going down quicker. If you're a full person, then you can find another full person or other full people, and you can create more than the sum of the two of you, as opposed to less. So Jung said that the second job, after you've cleaned out your shadow, good luck. Been working on that for a while. Okay, you really want to know the bad news? The bad news is if you clean out your personal shadow, then you got the collective shadow. You got the shadow of all what human beings have done to one another and to nature throughout evolutionary history. Okay, so you got a lot of work to do. It's a never-ending process, but you move essentially from the shadow work to the contrasexual work, and you realize the qualities in yourself that you haven't owned, that you think have to do with the other gender, but are really part of who you are. Once you do that, you come to the third stage of the individuation process, when you have to, when you identify again with the gender that you are. I mean, he was kind of gender-oriented, because in those days they saw genders as more different than we do. In the third stage, you identify with the gender that you are, but at a much higher level than before. So if you're a man, you identify with the hero or the sage. And if you're a woman, you identify with the earth mother, the magna mater, the mother of the world. And when you come to that stage, you're extremely empowered, and you have great, you make great import in the world. You have the energy to make great things happen. So there are people that you meet that seem to be coming from a higher place. They just have more of something. You know, they're more like the transpersonal self than the personal self. They have this amazing power. For a person like Mother Teresa, that's the feminine quality of caring brought to 36,000 lepers, you know. That's a big caring. That's a, she's a mother in the capital M, capital M, capital M sense. Unfortunately, Jung said there's a real danger at that third level. And that danger is the danger of inflation. People that realize they're cooking on energy that most people aren't cooking on, they have a tendency, if they have some ego left on them, which we all kind of do, and even if you don't, it grows like barnacles on the physical plane. Says Stephen Gaskin, the Monday night class guy from Hay Ashbury. He says, it doesn't matter how pure you are, you walk around in the world, you get ego, you know. You get a sense of separateness, and that gets puffed up. Jung said there's no way around that inflation. You just have to be wise enough not to, to act on that inflated sense of who you are. Otherwise, you become the guru that takes all the virgins and the 30-year-old Royces, or you become Charlie Manson. You know, people get they go wrong at very high levels. And why is that? It's because somehow the ego gets fueled by this greater energy and it aggrandizes itself too much. So Jung said there's a real danger to that. You've got to watch that. But if you're able to go past that, then you go to the capital S self. Then you go to what Jung called stone consciousness, consciousness of, that is the consciousness of everything. And you become one, you go into oneness. Like he said, that's the individuation process. So the idea is, in the transpersonal self, you're moving toward the largest sense of who you are. Abraham Maslow said, will lead me to my next diagram. Okay? Abraham Maslow said, as self-actualizing people grow, now he was before Buddha, Maslow didn't know about Buddhism very much, you know, I don't think at all, maybe a little bit, but he said self-actualizing people in extremely strong personalities, their personality, it's not that it goes away, it's that it opens up. They become more embracing of other people and tasks to do in the world from their strong sense of self. So it's not like they erase their sense of self. It's that they open their sense of self. So it's kind of the same thing. So let's go to the next diagram, okay?
We're up to step three.
Well, say again?
We're in step three. Step three?
Yeah. Oh, okay. Oh, four steps. First step is clean out your shadow.
Right.
Second step is real, own your contraceptual element, the part of yourself that you think is the opposite gender. It's really inside you. Third step is become the larger being that you are.
Right. So what's the?
And the fourth step is realize that you really everything. You're really the capital S self. There's really only one thing that that has split itself into the many. So you realize that your real identification is unity.
Is that number six?
No, that's not that. No, that's, you know, this, that's Jung. This diagram is acidulated. The transpersonal self stands between your individuality and the all. The transpersonal self is the conduit for the all to become the individual. Everybody says this in different words. So Bernie and then Jeanette.
Real quickly, I mean, Jung said all this and it's theoretically sounds really terrific and a great roadmap. Was he enlightened like this? Did he reach that point or was he just writing about it? It's easy to talk statement.
I never met him. My impression is he was here. He changed the world. He really changed the way we understand ourselves in a really positive way. His writings are extremely beautiful and clear and pure. I would say he had one foot in spiritual realization and one foot in being Carl Jung and trying to do his best in the world. You know, that's my impression, but I don't know. Jeanette is next, and then Helen, and then Cole.
My observation is where this is all the self-will trying to do more of the self-will. Where is there room for grace and the miraculous that we don't get to control all of this? There are things that happen that are mystery that we aren't always doing our will.
I'm getting there in my diagram. I have extended this diagram, or made a different diagram. Yeah, I agree. Let's see, how was that?
I just wanted to say to Bernie that you never really thought anyone but to the total individuation, including himself. He just said, strive for it. So it's a growth process. That's my understanding. He never really felt that he was above anything. He was striving for that. He felt we were striving like enlightenment, but you never really reach it. That's my understanding.
So you just say, be happy.
Don't worry about it.
Okay, so he, you might put it is, you haven't certainly tasted enlightenment, but he wasn't finally enlightened. How do you know? So tell me your first name.
Jay,
that's right, I remember. Yeah, so question.
I can't remember. Was Jung rejected? And if so, how did he deal with that?
No, he didn't. Jung, I don't think, faced very much rejection. Freud faced a lot of rejection.
But Freud
dealt with it by just digging down and saying, I'm right, I don't care if you believe it or not. Jung was saying more positive things and less objectionable things, so he met with more immediate acceptance in the culture. Because he wasn't talking about things like infantile sexuality, which the culture did not want to do. Okay, I got to flip over here and give you the other diagram, especially since Jeanette said what she said.
Okay, so I'm going to get rid of this.
So with this diagram certainly isn't comprehensive. It's just my kind of scribbling down some stuff, okay? Where it comes from is many of you have taken a class with me called Adventures in Consciousness when we go into trance and we have all these things happen that seem like they come out of nowhere. How did that happen? What does that mean? Where did that come from? It's really miraculous, you know, like what? How did I get that? You know? So what I decided to do was kind of make a little chart of all the possible things that people have reported that they have experienced. Okay? And I thought not just in my little class, but in any of the ways that we open our consciousness. So this is a somewhat comprehensive map of consciousness in terms of all the possible things that people say, I experienced that. I was aware of that. So here we go. If I can find it, if not, I'll have to make it again. There it is. There it is. Oh God. Next week, we get to talk about mystical experience. I'm sorry, I'm not going to get there this week. This week, we just set it up. Okay. So here we go. I don't know if I can fit even with two boards. Okay, so here we go. I'm going to make two diagrams, but they really all go together. The diagram looks like this. Okay. So first, we're going to make the down part, then we're going to make the up part. Okay. So we're going to go to present self. Who you are right now, and then it's going to expand. You're going to have to imagine an expansion downward. Okay. So the just below who you are at present, what you can bring in, some of which you can bring into consciousness just by focusing on it. Others you kind of have to spend more attention, and some things are just buried and you kind of can't bring them in. But past experience. The toys I played with when I was 5. What happened on my 14th birthday? You know, stuff like that is presumably brought back into your consciousness. You can become aware of it. Okay. Underneath that, gestation and birth. Understand what I'm describing now is what we generally call the unconscious. And what I call the personal unconscious, or the lower unconscious.
What does gestation mean?
Gestation means in the womb, when you were carried in the womb. Many of you heard me talk about Stan Grof's map of what happens as people go through deep experiential work, either holotropic breath work or psychedelic sessions. They tend first to have experiences from their personal past, and then there's a level at which they go into experiences of being carried and being born. Seems to underlie that. That's what Grof called the Ronkian level, R-A-N-K, for Otto Ronk, who was a co-worker of Freud's. If Freud mapped this, Ronk mapped this, and Grof mapped it better. Okay, so what happened? So what Grof says is, after you've done your work here, and then you do your work here, you go through a death and rebirth. You realize the circumstances of your birth, you feel your birth, and it kind of like frees you from that patterning, and then underneath that is other material that you can become aware of. So I'm going to put some of this stuff down with question marks, because people report it, but the question is are they accurate in their reports? So people report that deeper than their own gestation and birth, they can become aware of lives that preceded this life. I'm not saying this is true or not. We're going to talk about the veracity or not and what the various explanations are. I'm just saying that people report this. Epigenetic events.
What does that mean?
I don't know. Epigenetic events are events that happen to your ancestors that are reflected in how your DNA works. You know, the classic example is the Irish potato famine four generations ago. There are people in Ireland now that gain weight really rapidly, and it's because presumably their genome was set to, if there's any calories, hang on to them from four generations back. So epigenetic events that happen to your ancestors, in other words, and ancestral events in general. People report that they remember what happened deep, way back in their family history. And people try to track whether these things are true or not. We'll talk about that maybe later. Okay, so far we've looked at, this is the personal unconscious, or the lower unconscious. Then we can go below these, more basic than these things, to archetypes. So now that we've gone past the personal, we've gone to the collective. So this is the collective unconscious. Archetypes. What are archetypes? I don't know. I'm going to ask, when Craig Chalquist comes in a couple of weeks, I'm going to ask him, because there's no good definition I've ever found of what an archetype is. An archetype is a basic pattern of life that all human beings have within them. It's something that has to do with our biology and with our circumstance of being human beings. So archetypes are patterns that we all share, that everyone shares. For example, every child has to learn how to be an independent person, not just your parents' child. And around the world, kids do a lot of the same things to distance themselves at a certain point from their parents and find a new identity. It's called being a teenager. You're wrong no matter what, and I gotta go with those guys. That's a pattern that we all share. And Jung examined dreams from various cultures and saw that, even though the names were different, the dream patterns were the same. Remember, Joe Campbell, based on Jung's work, wrote the book A Hero with a Thousand Faces? about the fact that the hero's journey is a story of individuation, growth, and empowerment that every culture has. But the point is, these are things that we all share. And you can go and you can see a play in some culture that you don't know the words. And you can know who's the hero and who's the villain and what's happening because the patterns are recognizable to you. So these are also the ceremonies that people do around the world seem to resemble one another. These are the archetypes, supposedly, and they're based on being a human, being a biological human being. Okay. Below this, people report that they can have evolutionary experiences. They can be other creatures in the evolutionary journey. They can find themselves being proto-humans or primates or down. And so people report they can be the first cell that was ever alive, you know. So some people report that they can feel life begin on the earth. I'm not saying that they actually do contact us, but that's what they said. Life beginning. Deeper than that, some people say they can experience or do experience creation itself. That is, the coming into existence of the universe. The Big Bang. And people who have mystic experiences frequently report that. They say, I see how from nothing something came. Darkness was on the face of the waters, and God said, let there be light, and there was light. You know, it's a pretty old story of the Big Bang. You know? And then deeper than that, and this gets to, well, any of these things can inform your present self. Okay? Any of these things can, in an inspiration or an intuition, can come into you right now. Sometimes in a dream, sometimes when you're creative. So any of these levels can infuse you, can energize you. And then deeper than this, people report a source level. Okay, now we're going, this goes out like this, okay? Because the source level is everything. People report that there is a source of everything. We'll talk about that a lot next week. So this is underneath you right now. This is you up here. And this is what's underneath you. Now let's look at what's above you right now, okay? Just for grins. This is all theoretical. Okay. So here we go, present self. What I would like the effect of this to be on you is I would like the effect to be that you feel that you are more than you are consciously aware of, and that you are open to realizing or getting a glimpse of at least some of these levels, that you're open to the possibility that these things can occur to you. Okay, so there's your present self. Above your present self, now we're going into what Asa Joly called the superconscious. What's potential in you, what's possible for you that you haven't realized. So, potentialities. Oh, this should all be titled My Mind. Okay, My Mind. As in yours, your mind. Potentialities, things that you have within you that haven't yet been manifest. Was it Aristotle who talked about entelechy? The perfect you that is pulling you forward? That's kind of what this is about. The things that, maybe you decide you're going to take an adult ed class in ceramics. You've never really taken a class before, but you kind of think, oh, I'm going to try it, And you try it, and, you really take to it. And you really start producing some cool stuff, and you think, I had no idea I had this talent. No idea. And we discover that at any point in our lives, and frequently we discover it late in our lives, and we have absolute talents and proclivities that we didn't ever know. Okay, potentialities. All right. So you're still in your sense of self now. Now let's go to experiences beyond ordinary ego. That is, these are experiences that are beyond your usual sense of you being separate from other people. These are in a middle ground between you and everybody else. They're not confined to the usual sense of your boundaries. Paranormal experiences, parapsychology, clairvoyance, seeing stuff remotely, telepathy, mind-to-mind contact, psychokinesis, moving things by mind, precognition, seeing things before they happen. So these are, until recently, I got to tell you a little story here very quickly. These until recently have been incredibly poo-pooed by orthodox science. Even as very great scientists throughout history have investigated these things, it pulls people to know whether these things are true. There's some feeling that they are true, even if science says, there's no way you can do that, physics tells you this is not possible. Psychologists have been particularly disgusted by paranormality. Every Psych 100 textbook has, in its first chapter, a long exposition about being aware of pseudo-psychologies, which have no experimental evidence, but which people believe commonly is true, those idiots. However, in the last issue of The American Psychologist, The American Psychologist is the most august magazine published by the American Psychological Association. It's the magazine that goes out to all 160,000 members. Only articles that are incredibly well-researched and relevant to the entire field of psychology make it into The American Psychologist. In the last issue of The American Psychologist, knock me down, there is an article saying that a meta-analysis of all the research on parapsychology and the unvarnished conclusion is it exists and its effect sizes are comparable to the effect sizes of other way more established phenomena in psychology. Now, I got to tell you what's going to happen in the next 10 issues of American Psychology. There's going to be such a firestorm of people going, oh my God, I didn't publish that. Run you out of town. Because people are really passionate about this. But the point is, this guy did an analysis of all the research, and how it was done, and came to the conclusion that, we can't ignore this because there's a lot of research that shows it exists. So if you've ever had the feeling of somebody staring at you, and you looked around and there was somebody staring at you, you're not an idiot and you're not paranoid. Okay, next.
So no question mark.
No question mark. Future lives. People have experiences of lives that they're going to have. People have experiences of still having a sense of self. This is the borderline between the sense of self and beyond self. People have experiences of free consciousness. Of their consciousness moving into other beings. Suddenly I was a bird. Suddenly I was whatever. They experienced their own consciousness being in the, or joining with the consciousness of something else. This is a very frequent occurrence in holotropic space and in psychedelic space. And things. Stan Grof writes very convincingly about being, what was it, a towel in a bathroom? Somehow his consciousness got hooked into the consciousness of towel, you know? But the point is, people report that everything at some level is conscious, and that you can get in touch with any level of consciousness. Anything has some level of Buddha nature, maybe. Okay, collective experiences.
I'm running out of room.
Yeah, me too. collective experiences. People have experiences of being one with again, of experiencing things that are not localized to one being, but are part of collective movements, like the spirit of the Renaissance, or the anger of oppressed people everywhere, or the incredible opening of consciousness that happened about 25 or 2600 years ago around the world. You know, when Taoism happened at the same time, Buddhism was happening at the same time, the Greek philosophers were opening up their minds, you know. So you can have experiences that have to do with things that are beyond individual, and also things that are happening now that are beyond individual. You can feel the spirit of the times, literally. That there is some sort of spirit of the times that is investing itself in individual activity. Finally, other realities. People report that they experience other levels of reality that are discontinuous with this level. That there are other parallel levels of reality that people hop into. So really quickly, you can also experience, as you're moving up, the transpersonal self, which is the bound, as we looked at before, the boundary or the interface between the all and the individual. So you can experience the transpersonal self. That's frequently experienced as an inner teacher, a wise person that you can go to. Some of you have such spirit guide or spirit guides that you go to that helps you, that is part of yourself, but at the same time is joined to larger than yourself. Jung did this with Philemon, right? With the wise person that he went to consult, that gave him guidance. Okay? Higher beings and realms. People report that they go into more into realms like the realm of the angels, and they encounter beings that are much more evolved. That they go into various levels of paradisical levels or levels of greater energy. They go into titanic levels. Levels where there are beings that are have more consciousness. Finally, almost finally, unitive experiences. People have experiences of joining with everything, of becoming everything, of losing all boundaries, of identification with all existence. That's a classic mystical experience. And that is a very frequent experience that comes in a lot of different ways. A lot of different roots point to that same experience of being all. And then finally, people have the experience of either being in the presence of or being, merging with some sort of source level, which brings everything else out of it. So at the bottom and at the top, this thing joins. It's really not going like this, it's going like that. It's joining. So at the deepest level, there's a possibility of existence which contains within it all of these existent levels. So this is just a preparatory talk about some of the things that consciousness has, it has been reported that consciousness is capable of. And then we're going to look at various of these things in more detail and with a critical eye. Okay. Most of you know that I come from a science background, and I'm from Missouri. You got to show me. I mean, otherwise, it's just convenient delusion. But we'll talk about all that next week. I hope that when you leave this week, you come out of here with two things. One is you come out of here with a sense that you might be more than you give yourself credit for being, and you might kind of like open up to some of these possibilities. And even if you do it in your art, or you do it in your dreams, you do it just in your daydreams or your music. Let yourself be open to the fact that these might be ambient things. And secondly, that little list you made, you might want to look at that little list every once in a while and maybe add to it, but just kind of get a feeling for the splendid creature that you are that maybe isn't always evident to everybody else. But you better know about it, because it's going to be awesome. All right, I'll see you in a week.